Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again. Through the years, you'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello, and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Market Rundown with Chip Nellinger. Chip, how you doing tonight?
Doing well. We had a beautiful day. The nicest day we had this spring. It was almost 80 degrees, so we're enjoying it all here because the rain's coming.
That's what I hear. Are you guys going to get some rain? Sounds like we're going to get some snow. I mean, what? It wouldn't be spring in western Nebraska without a freak snowstorm every once in a while.
That's right.
It's crazy. Crazy, crazy. But it's this time of the year where you get these big snows come through like this, and they last about 4 hours, long enough for it to get to the ground. Then it melts off pretty quick and makes a muddy mess and slows down some field work and those kind of things that pop up. But for the most part, it's kind of one of those things that we kind of anticipate.
Yeah, there's a lot of moisture coming, and that's, like you said, the snow, if it comes in snow form, it's not going to last very long, but, you know, it's still precipitation, and,
right.
You know, right now, it's wet everywhere. It's wet here. We've had, it rained today. It rained hard today, and sun came back out, so it ended up being a nice day to be outside, but it's certainly not good for field work. We're not doing any net drying. We're adding to the wet soil profile, so
yeah,
and more rain coming, you know, later this week, and it's I don't know, it's early enough that it can still turn off, and we're gonna get it planted, but I don't know, it's not the best start we've had in a long, long time, and you know, especially for the rest of you, to get out to, between you and I is the real war zone,
yeah.
And you know, I've heard estimates between, I don't know, 300,000 to 700,000 acres that, you know, along that Missouri River Valley that won't be planted. I mean, not like switch to corn or switch to beans, it's not going to get planted. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll see. It's definitely got the makings for a lot of volatility. We've already seen a little bit of that. And it's going to be an interesting growing season, to say the least.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, whether you just kind of look around on Twitter and you kind of see what's out there. And there's a lot of folks that are in the field working. You know, if you look at, you know, it looks like western Oklahoma and you get down into western Texas and even into eastern Texas, for that matter, it seems like there's some good field work getting done, some planning getting done. Those kind of things are kind of on schedule. But the further north you go, the less work's getting done. And it's just because of whether it's too cold or too wet or some freak storms coming through or whatever it might be. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on just the overall planted acres reports and those kind of things that start popping up.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, there's a lot of issues there with, like we mentioned, all the flooding that's happened. If you remember back, this past fall was just one of the worst falls probably in modern history as far as getting, you know, crop out, getting field work done. There was no field work done to speak of, no, you know, very little fertilizer or field work or nitrogen, you know, and hydro supply. And now you've got an issue with the Mississippi River where a lot of that flows, a lot of fertilizer and nitrogen flows up north on the Mississippi, and you get much north of St. Louis, and they still got high water issues, and you know, it's really restricting the flow here. So we got that potential bottleneck if it doesn't straighten out quickly. Certainly more rain to the north, and, you know, the Dakotas, Minnesota area does not bode well for the Mississippi River water levels. So there's a little bit of everything out there. And, you know, we'll see. There is, I guess the point being, and we can talk about this, but commodity funds have basically record short position, new record short. I think they're about 270,000 contracts short in corn, give or take. Can't remember the exact numbers from Friday's commitment to trade report, but we are, you know, far from assured of a record crop at this point. It's, you know, arguably a late start, one of the later starts we've had in a while. the market doesn't quite perceive that yet. And we always get planted, and I know we're powered up, and we can get a lot of corn on the ground in a hurry, but that doesn't mean it's under ideal conditions. And I think the one thing the market might be missing is the fact that we do have a tremendous amount of field, but we can, it's not like we're just ready to go plant when the weather cooperates. We've got just a ton of field work to do. So that's going to take some time to get everything done field work-wise. And then you plant, and right now it is, obviously less than ideal. We get maybe a day and a half of nice warm weather, and then comes the rains for 2 or 3 days. So we're not in a real good weather pattern right now. The extended forecast doesn't look good. You guys, kind of that central northern plain, is going to get hammered again later this week. Mm-hmm. Another one of those kind of like mini hurricanes, where this low pressure moves through, and it's, essentially kind of like a mild hurricane. The low pressure is as low as, what they would classify as a Category 1 hurricane out, on the coast. And with that comes a bunch of crappy weather, and like you said, snow, rain. So we'll see. The big thing here last week was Friday. We had a nice rally going and everything, corn, beans, wheat. But then Thursday afternoon, we saw the announcement that it's going to be at least 4 more weeks for a trade agreement. The Chinese trade delegation did stay through the weekend. I think they left today, either late yesterday or this morning. So they did push through and work a little bit more. They're going to talk like by video conference here going forward the next week. But there is no official agreement yet, and the market took a little bit of a dip there on Friday because of that news and just disappointment that it's the same old thing. It's like hurry up and wait on this thing. Everyone's getting just sick and tired of it. So we'll see. I think we've got, a bad enough forecast that, and hopefully a trade agreement coming at some point. It could be sooner. He didn't say that it couldn't come quicker than 4 weeks. They're working on it still. But, I don't think we fall apart totally, but we're probably not going to go a whole lot of anywhere just slopping around in this grain market until we know a little more about the trade agreements. And it's still early enough that the weather doesn't matter in the market yet, but it stays like this. We're still talking about this in 2 Sundays or 3 Sundays, and it's still cold and wet and rainy, and we haven't got much field work done, then the market's going to care a lot more than it does tonight. Yeah. So stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah, there's a... I'm so sick of talking about China. It's about China, man.
No, I know. I'm with you. And everybody is. And the market is. And that's why you see that announcement and, beans puked by 10 or 12 cents at one point Friday. And
yeah.
Corn was down a nickel at one point. It came back a little bit on the close. But, yeah. I mean, the whole market's just sick of it. And the problem is the funds. Yeah, it was like, well, how can the funds sell it, right? The weather's crappy, we're going to have a trade agreement, and, the only one making money are the shorts right now. So you can cuss them all you want and say, well, that doesn't make sense, why would you be short? But they're the only ones making money right now. So, and they're going to keep selling it until they're proven wrong. They got so much money and they're being short the markets that they don't care if they get out at the absolute low. They're going to make money even if they get out higher than where we're at today on some sort of an official announcement of a trade agreement. So they're just going to keep selling it because, like everyone else, you, me, everyone is sick of talking about China at this point and the potential trade agreement, and they just want something set in stone, and we're not getting it yet.
Yeah. The part I hate about it is this is the same conversation that we've had for almost a year now. It's just that same, the same deal. We don't, well, we're going to do this, then we're not going to do this. Or, we said, we're going to, Trump comes out or somebody from the delegation comes out and says, hey, you know what? We set the world on fire. We're going to get a deal done and China's ready to do this. And then China comes back and says, I don't even know what they're talking about. We never even said that. So same thing, I keep hearing this, we're 10% away from getting this deal done, and it goes nowhere, and then the markets reflect that.
Yep. And the other problem is that it's been hyped up so much at this point that you know, it's going to be great for farmers and this massive amount of agricultural products China's going to take, that it could potentially be a little bit underwhelming once it's announced. So
yeah.
Hopefully all the presidential tweets have been, will be what they deliver, because I think it's set a pretty high bar on what the market expects. And it better be some big, big numbers or the market's going to be underwhelmed. And instead of, you know, this great deal that takes, beans 50 cents higher and corn 30 cents higher, we're going to open up 7 cents higher and close 5 lower, and the market's going to be disappointed. So...
So I've read two different articles, both, I think one was in Bloomberg and one was in, actually, I listened to an interview on Bloomberg, and I read it in the Wall Street Journal, but they were talking about one, I can't remember which one was which, but one of them were talking about a 2024 zero trade difference balance between the U.S. and China, right? Obviously, the bulk of that is going to come from agricultural products, right? That's pretty much a given. Now, the other side of that, the flip side of that was... By 2025, they would fully implement the intellectual property thing. So, what are you gaining there? Did we gain anything? They still have 5 or 6 years to kind of mess around with,
right,
with trademarks and everything
I
else.
Know.
But they've got 5 years.
That's the thing they farm is saying, yeah, is, there's been some talk about that. It's concerned me a little bit, too, how long it takes to implement all this and how long we're going to allow them to kind of ramp up. And there's a lot of questions in this thing that is a little bit scary, a little bit concerning.
Yep. Okay, so let's flip back a week ago Friday when they had the acreage, Planted Acreage report come out and on the estimate come out. And, obviously there was a 30-day lag between the floodwaters and the time it took the survey. I've read and heard anything up around 3 million to even up into 5 million acres of corn could be displaced because of this, of the planting, because of the flood and then just because of the way the planting season's kind of starting to stretch out. What would that mean to the market and what kind of effect do you see that having on stuff?
Yeah, well, I think that most people would argue that you've seen the highest corn acreage number. And if it stays wet, it's going to drop possibly dramatically. Mm-hmm. And, that's certainly going to help support corn. The question becomes, is that going to be prevent plant that doesn't get planted or will get switched to beans? And the problem is everyone thinks, we're going to get the final acreage report at the end of June, right? And so we're going to have all the answers. We're not going to have any of the answers to the problem because the acreage reports are, in my opinion, not synced up to the RMA data. And so we're going to be fighting this question. This is going to be just about like China. We're going to be fighting this question until the January crop report, unfortunately. Because, number one, how many acres go to prevent plant? How many acres get switched from corn to beans? And we're not going to know by the end of June, unfortunately. And I've heard estimates of up to 700,000 acres along the Missouri River that won't get, I'm not talking switch from corn to beans. It's not going to get planted under any circumstances.
Right.
More rain and snow isn't going to decrease that number. The Red River Valley, I saw some pictures on Twitter, North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota, portions of South Dakota, very, very wet and flooded. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be more than we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years, I can guarantee you that. But unfortunately, Casey, we're going to be fighting this out until January. Everybody should call your congressman and your state secretary of ag and tell them to fix the acreage numbers and sync it up to the RMA, and we'll know quicker and more accurately. So I'm kind of down. I'm on my soapbox about the acreage reports. I think that they're not quite right. Maybe 20 years ago, it was the best we could do, but we can do a lot better now, and they won't fix it.
Yep. There's a lot of technology that goes out in those fields right now that can tell you exactly what got planted, when, and where.
Exactly.
All kinds of great stuff. Pretty much real time, so they could do that pretty easily. Okay, so now another part of that, along with that Missouri River Valley up in eastern Nebraska and Iowa and all the way up into North and South Dakota. I've heard the number in million head of cattle lost and counting along with that. But the cattle market really hasn't had a big reaction to that. What's your take on that?
Well, I think we may have, though. If you look back a couple weeks ago when we put the high in, we rallied about $4 or $5 straight up immediately off of that news. And I believe it was the Nebraska Secretary of Ag came out and gave some numbers. And I think he mentioned maybe up to a million head of calves were lost. So I think some of that may be factored in. We trimmed the cash market lower for a couple weeks now. This past week was really volatile. You had a huge up day, $2.50 on higher on Thursday. We relaxed a little bit Friday. I think hogs and cattle are playing into each other now too. You've had a huge move in hogs because of this African swine fever issue. And the reports are some pretty reliable sources are saying that, big numbers, which we've kind of known for a while, but we're starting to get some confirmation of just a massive amount of numbers of hogs that have been lost in China. And it looks like it could be between 30 and 40% of their hog herd. Massive numbers. And so even though cash is getting a little bit lower, this huge in cattle, huge rally in hogs will start to spill over and support there. So the meat markets, the cattle, feeder cattle, lean hogs, starting to see massive amounts of volatility. And, you better have a tight seatbelt there in those markets because it's way different than the grain markets right now. I think you could see that eventually in the grain markets, but these livestock markets are just getting really volatile, really choppy. Huge moves, big daily ranges, just getting kind of a lot of excitement built up in these livestock markets. I don't think you've seen the high in hogs. If you haven't seen the high in hogs, it's going to spill over and drag cattle higher, irregardless of what, the cash cattle market's doing. So I guess if there's one exciting portion of our ag markets, it is definitely in the livestock sector right
now. Yeah. Yep. Okay, so one other outside market I want to hit on. The stock market's kind of been back and forth all over the place. They finished up on Friday quite a bit, actually, about 400-plus points. But the one I've been keeping my eye on quite a bit is the oil market. OPEC came out and said they were going to basically get oil back up to $70 a barrel, and once they got there, they would start making decisions on where they wanted to go from there. Obviously, when that happens, the U.S. shale oil market's going to go back online and start feeding that in. They start breaking even somewhere in that high 40s, low 50s range, somewhere in there, and that's going to start bringing that up. So we're at that point now. I think West Texas closed somewhere around $52 on Friday, something like that. And so that market's going to take off. What's your take when you look out there at the oil market right now? Do you see anything out there that is a trigger to you that says, hey, we're going to see that $70, you see that coming true? Do you see that happening? Do you see that the U.S. market's going to be a big competitor in that when it gets to that $50-plus barrel oil range?
Yeah, I think we're going to be a big competitor, but if OPEC says we want oil at $70, I'm going to probably put my money on OPEC. And despite, President Trump saying, OPEC needs to increase production and we need lower oil prices. So stock market's on fire. It's kind of challenging all-time highs. Crude oil had a really decent week last week. And so I'm gonna favor and kind of lean towards the fact that if OPEC says they want $70 crude oil, it's only $8 away. Mm-hmm. Speculative community loves the oil market, and they probably are going to get up to that level, if not higher. And you know, again, it's not great when you go to fill up your car, your truck, your tractor, but it can spill over and start giving us a little bit of inflationary boost as well in our commodity markets. It'll also help ethanol margins as well as, you know, crude oil and the products, heating oil and unleaded gasoline rally along with crude oil. That'll help give ethanol margins a little bit of a bump, and we need that as well. So it's a double-edged sword. You know, we're definitely obviously going to pay more at the pump, but from a corn demand standpoint, it might be, and just kind of a general inflationary standpoint, it might be something that could give us a little bump in our ag markets. So our crude oil is always the, you know, the double-edged sword there. You know, do you want to pay more at the pump? I guess in the farm world, maybe you kind of do, because it's going to help, you know, maybe light fire under the inflationary type boost for commodity, you know, grain prices especially. So,
The U.S. dollar had a pretty good run yesterday, or by the end of the weekend. Looks like the dollar finished higher compared to the other stuff. Brexit's probably driving a little bit of that. Some people jumping out of the European markets and putting some stuff in the U.S. dollar. But probably one other thing that probably really drove that more than anything was the fact that the Fed came out and said, hey, we're not going to raise rates here for a while. It's like we're going to kind of do a wait-and-see type approach to how we're going to move forward with what we had talked about doing every quarter, you know, and kind of wait and see. So as you look at that right now, that's not necessarily helping our export market at all with a stronger dollar. But that being said, we still pretty much have the cheapest commodities out there as far as corn and beans go.
Yeah, really, and wheat as well. So, yeah, the dollar obviously is going to drive that. See a lot of volatility there as well. I think Brexit's playing a lot into this. That when everyone kind of says the dollar, let's look at the dollar, that's a dollar index, a basket of foreign currencies against the U.S. dollar. And I don't know why they ever did this, but when they developed the dollar index, it's probably back in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, they decided we're going to use the euro currency as 50% of the weighting of that. So the dollar, as most people look at it, is the dollar index, and unfortunately, the euro currency has the biggest weighting. And it's been flying around because, you know, the United Kingdom's going to leave or not going to leave. What's that mean to the European Union? And it's caused the dollar some big swings. But, you know, that you almost have to dig in and dive in and look at separate different currencies. And it's not all as bad as what the dollar index would tell you, and you know, really, if the truth be told, the Brazilian real and the Argentine peso probably have more influence on particularly beans, but also corn, to some respect, than any other foreign currency because of the competitiveness that they have in the Southern Hemisphere. So, point being, what I'm saying is all this: there's some mixed signals coming from some of the currencies. Been a little, for sure, a little bit of a headwind against our grain markets. But we are, especially in wheat, the cheapest source in the world. We saw a nice bump higher last week in wheat exports, so that was good news. Little bit of a bummer week in exports on corn. Beans were good, really good, but that was because of the previous week's big announcement to China, so that was kind of expected in beans. But the dollar is definitely going to play a big role going forward the next 6 months to a year. And there's plenty of outside influences. And even if they don't have Brexit one, what the Fed's going to do here, we're going to raise interest rates, President Trump Trump is telling them we may need to lower interest rates.
Right, yeah, I saw that.
Immediately. Yeah. So that's going to have a major influence on the dollar going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a funny article. I read that while I was sitting in the lobby waiting on everyone to come down for the basketball tournament this week. And we're in Laramie, and I was like, really? We're going to go backwards, because that was the whole, you know, that was going to save us by doing that. Now we're going to go backwards because, yeah, whatever. It's, yeah, whatever.
Well, and that, to be honest, would help. That would help re-stimulate the economy.
Oh, absolutely, it would. Yeah.
Cranking in some respects.
Yep.
But that would help pump the economy up. It would be a little bit inflationary.
Yep.
That would definitely help the grain markets. But unfortunately, or fortunately, probably fortunately, I shouldn't say unfortunately. Fortunately, the Federal Reserve is a separate, supposedly unbiased and unpolitical organization, and they're going to make their own decisions despite what other people think they should or shouldn't do. But if you're in the ag world, I mean, you are open for a no more interest rate increases.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or a small cut. That would be a big shock and probably give us a little bit of a boost from an inflationary, tailwind there.
Yeah, my only fear with going backwards this quick is that there'd be a. I'm not saying that the economy isn't doing well because it's doing very well, but a false sense of how well it's doing, and then everything would take off and just go like crazy one way, and then the correction back down would be something that I'm worried about with that. So that's kind of part of my statement there is you talk about throwing uncertainty in the marketplace. Holy crap. You go backwards a quarter point or a half a point or something like that. Next thing you know, boom, stock market's at 30,000 and then we're going to recorrect back down to 20,000 and what happens then?
So yeah.
It's just, that's the scary part.
And the reality is everybody, gauges the economy on the stock market and it's not a one for one correlation.
No.
So.
Not at all.
You're exactly right. The Fed almost needs to wait a little bit. Maybe not raise rates. Certainly, probably not drop them.
Yeah.
Just go steady for a while, and because that's a tool they need to kind of help cushion the next setback. And it's nobody knows when that is, but it's likely just around the corner. We've had a nice run in the economy, so a little bit of a hiccup, and they've got a little bit of ammunition to throw at us to kind of cushion us, but if they start dropping immediately, that they lose some of their firepower there.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. All right, Chip. So, folks, if you've listened to this show, you can tell there's a lot of stuff going on. Whether you're in a flood-stricken area or have another blizzard out west, or the mountains were packed full of snow when I was out in Wyoming. Just looking at the horizon, and so there's gonna be plenty of water coming out of the for the western part of the United States, when you start looking at irrigation, so there's going to be plenty of stuff out there. Plenty of stuff happening. People working on a plan or need help developing one. How would they do that, Chip?
Yeah, best way to just give us a call, 309-550-7213. We would love to chat with you. It's critically important. The grain market's putting everyone to sleep, and it really should. There still should be a high priority, high focus. Look at what cattle have done, look at what feeder cattle have done, look at what hogs have done. That will eventually come back to the grain markets. You've got to have a plan. So we'd love to chat with you and kind of give you some advice and a second opinion, second set of eyes and ears on what your current plan is, and just give you our opinion. So you can give us a call, and we'd be happy to chat with you.
Right on. All right, Chip, well, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you again next week. This is Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network.
All right, thank you. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Nellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.